Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bill Tice. I represent Ms. Salgado. I'm going to be presenting most of the argument on behalf of both of the appellants, although Mr. Ravitz is available for a few minutes if the court has some questions about the record in his case, because as the court knows, this one indictment produced two trials. But in these two trials, the really critical facts are undisputed, and they are these: that there were no government funds that were involved in this transaction.
Well, secondly, so what was your position? If there were government funds, but somehow these, you know, your client wasn't able to wrest them from the people, from these guys, then would you concede it was an attempt? Would they violate the statute, or would they have to know that these were federal agents?
Under FIOLA, Your Honor, if there were government funds, they would be guilty of the crime of conspiracy and or attempt. In my client's case, she was found guilty of just conspiracy. Mr. Ravitz's case was found guilty of the attempt as well.
And I have to say, with respect to your client, it seems to me that there was abundant evidence that she entered into an agreement with Mr. Pacheco to commit this crime, and that she also completed overt acts toward that end. So I don't know what element of a conspiracy offense is missing in her case. It's not as though it's legal to take money from people. I know in your argument you say, well, you know, if you and I agreed to go across the street to Walgreens and buy a can of Coke, I mean, you know, okay, that's a legal thing to do, so we can agree to that. But what these people were agreeing to do was to steal this, you know, I think of it as cocaine, to exchange this false cocaine for money.
But
that's not legal.
I think that your Honor's question forgets something that's very important. Federal law does not criminalize every activity that could be regarded
as
criminal.
That,
and I would agree with you that there is sufficient evidence in the record for the jury to find that she conspired to commit a robbery. But that's not enough. It had to be that she conspired to commit a robbery of federal funds. That's the crime.
But you're assuming a specific intent level there that I don't think the cases support, that she actually had to know she was conspiring to rob a government agent holding money belonging to the United States. And I don't see what supports that.
Well, I think that part of the confusion comes from FIOLA. In FIOLA, we've got a case where people act and they don't know that the victim is a federal officer, and the court says makes no difference. He was a federal officer, therefore you're guilty of conspiracy. But FIOLA certainly didn't say that any time you assault someone, you're guilty of a federal offense, even when the victim is not a federal officer.
No, of course not.
And that's
not
what this case is about. Because the government is saying, if you try to steal money, and it turns out that the money is not government money, and it turns out you didn't even think it was government money, you're still guilty.
But I think you're overlooking what the Supreme Court was talking about in Garcia. The purpose of this statute is to protect these various federal officers, whether they're post office people or whether they're undercover agents or cooperating informants or whatever they are, who are out there with government money. And her conspiracy, I don't know where you find a need that she has to have thought in her mind, I'm going to go steal money from a federal official. Why does that have to be an element of the agreement?
Because an element of the offense is that there be federal money. Now, she doesn't have to know that it's federal money. And we go back to FIOLA. If there is...
The logic of your argument is that there would be no conspiracy conviction even if the person who showed up was an agent of the DEA, that is, a federal employee, and he was carrying $1 million. Your argument would have to be the crime of conspiracy is committed with the agreement before anybody shows up, and therefore it makes no difference who shows up, whether it's an informant, whether it's an agent, whether he has money, whether he has no money.
I don't see
how it's possible to say they're guilty of conspiracy if the person who shows up is an agent or is packing government funds, but not guilty of conspiracy otherwise. Whether the crime of conspiracy has been committed has to depend on what happens at the agreement stage rather than the later stage.
But that's exactly what this court said in Shively, that if the bank was not insured, you could be found guilty of conspiracy because you thought or you believed that the bank
was
insured.
That I understand. And so your argument with respect to the conspiracy count has to be that it makes no difference whether the person who comes to the deal was a government agent or carrying government funds. If the people did not anticipate that, then they have not committed the crime of conspiring to rob a government employee or somebody carrying government funds.
Well, I think we're focusing on...
Are you making that argument?
I'm really not making that argument, Your Honor. I think the proceedings...
I don't think your argument is coherent.
Well, let me try to explain to you why it is. Instead of focusing on the identity of the person who shows up, we need to focus on the ownership of the funds. And if a government agent or a snitch or somebody's grandmother comes to deal with government funds, then they are guilty of conspiracy even though they didn't know they were government funds.
What if the conspirators believed that their intended victims were government agents who had money, who had government money, but they were mistaken? These people, they were agents, but they didn't have any money.
Then they would
be
guilty.
Guilty in that case?
Then they would, under the teaching of Fiola and the other cases that we've cited in our brief.
So it's not that you have to have the money. It's something about the state of mind of the conspirators. There doesn't have to be money.
It's sort of either or. Because of Fiola...
The holding of Fiola is the state of mind of the conspirators is irrelevant.
In a situation where there are real federal agents... And when you've got a situation where there aren't real federal agents or there isn't real federal money, then the government can fall back on their beliefs.
But you just said you don't have to have the money, right?
Yeah.
See, you have to make clear what you think is the minimum requirement for the conspiracy and for the attempt. We have both of those issues. So what is the minimum?
As I said before, and I guess the court is disagreeing, it's an either or. In a conspiracy prosecution, the money either has to be there, the federal money.
Okay, or what?
Or the conspirators think that there is federal money there.
And for the attempt?
The same answer, Your Honor.
So for an attempt, they have to either there has to be money, or they have to think what? That these are federal agents?
Well, they have to think that it's federal money. The 2114...
Is it enough that they think it's a federal agent? They try to rob someone they think is a federal agent, but he has no money. Is that enough?
If they think he's a federal agent carrying federal money, that would certainly be enough.
Even though he has no money.
Well, then 2114A is irrelevant. That would be a crime under 111, the statute in FIOLA itself. The actual federal agent who's not carrying any money is covered by 111.
That's correct.
2114A matters only if somebody is not actually a federal employee but is carrying federal money.
Right, because it combines both elements, if you will, that there's not only the federal money, but there's also someone who has custody of federal money.
There isn't anything but federal money, right? 2114A covers the set of people who are not employees of the federal government, but are carrying federal assets.
It covers
the set of people who are federal employees, whether or not they're carrying federal assets.
As long as in 111 they're performing their official duties.
Yeah, well.
But I think that takes us far beyond the case that we've got here right now.
Suppose they know this is a federal agent and a CI, and They don't. They hope he has money, but he turns out not to. And then you'd say that's fine.
Correct.
Well, so
but they
I guess
can't
a
know he's a federal agent, or they wouldn't show up. Right? Knowledge that X is a federal agent is inconsistent with appearing to do the deal. They'll show up and attempt to deliver the drugs or rob the person only if they believe he's not a federal agent.
Well, all you're positing is that there will be cases where the government loses, and I agree. That is the purpose.
You could have a case where they try to rob a confidential agent. That's not a problem. But what I find puzzling in your position, or maybe just intrinsically in the case, is on the one hand, if you know this person or you think this person is a confidential agent who has money for the buy or something like that, and you try to rob him, and it turns out he doesn't have money, then you agree that's an attempt.
Your Honor, relying on Shifley.
You also agree that if they have money, that if the person has money, you attempt to rob him. You don't know he's a confidential agent. You have no idea. And you fail to rob him. Your attempt is interrupted. You're also guilty of an attempt. So in one case, you need knowledge, and the other, you don't. That's what I find puzzling.
Well, you know, I'm in that position because of Fiola and Shively, but in this case, it's not a bad position to be in because there neither was the federal money nor the belief that there was federal money. This is the unusual...
No, I agree. This is very attenuated.
This is the unusual case where the boundaries have to be marked out. Otherwise, if the government succeeds in this case, they could have taken these same facts and proceeded to charge the defendants with bank robbery. No bank, not a problem. You didn't think it was a bank, no problem again. You're a robber. You're a bad person. You should be guilty
of
what...
Well, but the argument on the other side would be that... So the government wants to protect its confidential informants, and it wants to protect its own money, obviously. So if we go along with the government here and say that this was an attempt... Well, it gives a little more protection to confidential agents and even to federal money because it says, well, you know, if you blunder into one of these people, try to rob him, even if it turns out he doesn't have the money, maybe he was just robbed 10 minutes ago, so there's no money left, you're still going to be punished federally, and that gives a little more protection to these confidential informants and to U.S. money.
It does that, but at great violence to the statute. It would be like a McKinney saying, you know, we're really concerned about kidnapping.
Well, I don't know. It depends. The key word in the statute is attempt, right?
Well, attempt and conspiracy, depending on which...
Okay, I'm more interested in the attempt, but no, that's fine. But an attempt and conspiracy are both, you know, very vague words, and... I don't know why it's such a stretch to apply them here. Something of a stretch.
Well, I see my time is up, so I'll yield the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tice. Mr. Ravitz.
May I please court counsel?
Please come to the microphone before you begin to speak.
May it please the court, counsel. I want to thank Mr. Tice for doing all the heavy lifting here. I represent Mr. Pacheco. As you know, he had a separate trial from Ms. Salgado, so if Your Honors have some questions regarding his matter, I'll be happy to address those.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Rodney.
May it please the court, my name is Renee Rodney and I represent the appellee. The appellant's convictions in this case fit comfortably within the law of attempt.
Well, I don't think they fit comfortably. I don't think that. No, but so what is your view of the attempt crime? So they don't have to know, the defendant doesn't have to know that the person is a, you know, agent of the United States, right? Doesn't have to know that. But if he doesn't know that the person is an agent, and if the person turns out not to have any money, isn't that a pretty tenuous What if you were walking along and someone attempted to rob you? Say you're not assistant U.S. attorney. You're a confidential agent, and you're walking along. Someone robs you. You don't have any money. But of course, there are times at which you do have money that you know prosecutors have given you. So would that be a violation of 2114A?
Yes, if the intent of the defendant or the person who attempted the robbery was to carry out that robbery and I was working as a federal agent or an undercover informant, and that's pretty much all they have to know.
But what if you'd never been given any U.S. money?
The lack of money does not change
but
the appellant.
But just turns this into a crime, attempting to rob an agent of the United States, right? Or an agent who sometimes has money? That is, what force would having lawful charge, control, etc., custody of mail or money, what would be left of that? And wouldn't be anything.
Well, the purpose of the statute is to protect federal agents, postal workers, other lawful custodians of government property.
Yes, but I'm talking about a confidential informant who has no custody. He's never had custody. Right? He's newly hired, and the prosecutor says, you know, if you give me some good information, so on, maybe next time I'll send you out on a controlled buy of money. But first you'll have to prove that you have good information. And 5 minutes later, the person is robbed, right? Has no money, never had money. That violates 2114A?
Well, to successfully...
That says that every theft from a confidential agent or every attempt to rob, every effort to rob or robbery of a confidential agent is a federal crime.
You would have to focus on the intent of the robber.
No, you don't. Just an attempt.
In charging an attempt.
You don't require any state of mind besides
whether they intended to carry out the robbery.
But it's the robbery.
You don't require the robber to know or think
right.
that the victim is a confidential informant.
No, that's not required. All you have to show is that they had an intent to carry out the underlying offense, which in that case would be the robbery.
So you're really saying that any robbery from a confidential informant violates the statute. And that just reads out having lawful charge, control, or custody. I mean, I would have thought you'd at least say someone who customarily has this or it's an appearance of the person having this, something of that. Something to bring back this part of the statute, you know, bring the language back.
Why doesn't one take the statute as it's written? Statute says it's a crime to attempt to rob or attempt to rob, and then it defines person, and the defined person is a person possessing mail, matter, money, or property in the United States. So you can rob or attempt to rob such a person, but in the criminal prosecution you have to show that the person being robbed or attempted to be robbed is that named person. And it doesn't look like there was any proof here that the person robbed was the person so defined.
And it's not required that the person who attempted the robbery know that. It's not required that
I'm
the government show that.
Knowledge. I'm not talking about knowledge. The question is, doesn't the prosecutor have to prove that the person who was attempted to be robbed was a person defined by that statute? The definition of what makes you a person. I mean, this is common to all of these states, common to 111. You have to show that the person is actually a U.S. employee to bring him within 111, right? And here it looks like to bring him within 114, 2114, you have to show that he was actually in possession of mail matter, money, or property.
The status of the intended target of a robbery attempt does not have to be established to sustain a conviction for attempt.
This is a 111 prosecution. 111 says it's a crime to rob, assault, etc., an employee of the United States during his official duties. Are you suggesting that you can charge a violation of 111 without showing that the person robbed or assaulted was an employee of the United States or on official duties? Seems to me you have to show both under 111. And if you have to show both of those things under 111, you do agree with that, I trust.
I would agree that you would have to establish that they were acting in the course of their official duties under 111, yes.
That they're actually federal employees and actually acting in the course of their duties. Because otherwise, if somebody just assaults a random person on the street, you could prosecute on the ground that maybe in the future they'd be federal employees. So you have to show they're actually employees and actually carrying out official duties. Well, if that's so, why don't you have to show under a 2114 prosecution that they're actually carrying money or mail matter or property?
Because in the context of an attempt, the facts as they turn out to be are not relevant to proving whether that defendant carried the specific intent to rob the person.
I'm asking you, remember how we got here. I asked you about the scope of 111, and you said it has to be actually a federal employee and actually carrying out official duties. And that would be true whether it's a completed crime or an inchoate crime. Why is the same approach not true for 2114?
I'm not sure if that would be true if you were trying to charge an attempt under Section 111, that you had to establish those facts. Because these
Suppose Jones walks up to somebody on a street in Chicago and clobbers him over the head with a blackjack, right? And the person clobbered is not a federal employee, never has been a federal employee, never will be a federal employee. Could you prosecute him under 111 on the theory that it was an attempt to assault a federal employee? It was just missing any knowledge that he was a federal employee and the fact that he was a federal employee, but impossibility is no defense.
Under 111, I would say no.
All right. The question I'm asking, given that answer about 111, why is 2114A any different?
Well, within the facts of this case...
I'm not asking about the facts of this case. I'm asking about the structure of these two statutes.
Or under Section 2114A, it does not have to be shown that lawful money was actually stolen in a completed robbery. And the person attempting the robbery or committing the robbery does not have to know that they were actually robbing a lawful
but you're not understanding. I think the question is, why does the universe of people, why doesn't 2114A define the universe of people in the same way that 111 did? 111 happens to do it by saying who's a federal employee and what are they doing. 2114A defines a universe of people who are carrying federal property functionally. So that would be a way of answering Mr. Tice's point about the need for some boundaries. Otherwise, the government could prosecute virtually everything that happens in the way of robberies simply by calling it an attempt. In every single drug transaction, other kinds of transactions I can think of, well, maybe somebody out there has federal money, or maybe they're somehow a federal agent. But if you say only the robberies of this universe of people, those carrying federal property, exist, then you wouldn't have made the stipulation you did here that said the guy had nothing.
In the case at issue here, the facts were that the appellants were attempting to rob.
We know they were attempting to rob somebody, but you didn't prove that it was a person with federal money, property, assets.
And the government was not required to prove that because an attempt
sort of
was charged.
Stating that, and the question is why, given this statute?
Because in an attempt, the focus is on what the defendants intended to
like,
do.
You need something like constructive custody or something of that sort to bring these, to give some force to the last half of the statute.
Yeah.
Why don't you, look, why don't you do this for the future? When you send these people out, give them $1, right? Give them $1. then you're home free. Right?
Or prosecute this under 2118, a statute that is actually designed to deal with events of this kind. I have no clue why this is prosecuted under 2114 rather than 2118. Can you enlighten me? Pardon? 2118 deals with robberies involving controlled substances, robberies or attempted robberies involving controlled substances. It's a statute actually written to address this kind of event. A total puzzle why you don't use the statute that's designed for this rather than what appears to be a statute randomly selected from the criminal code.
Well, as Your Honor knows, there were no actual controlled substances involved in this case. There was sham cocaine that was attempted to be traded.
Impossibility is irrelevant in an attempt prosecution.
The statute that was chosen was Section 2114A. The evidence established that the defendants had an intent to rob someone. That person was working for the DEA. And
alas, not carrying any mail matter, money, or property of the United States.
And because it was an attempt, that was not a required showing. As for the conspiracy charges against Ms. Salgado and the conviction that was sustained, there was no reason for her to know that she was agreeing to attempt to steal government money.
Was she carrying any property of the United States?
The CS, no.
He wasn't wired?
I believe there was surveillance.
Transactions, the informant is wearing a wire, which I believe is property of the United States.
I believe in this case there was surveillance. I can't say with certainty whether he was actually wearing a recording device. Well, with that, Your Honors, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the convictions of both appellants. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Tice, Mr. Ravitz didn't take very much time, so we'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can I get just a very quick response?
I have a very quick response to that last question. It's my understanding the informant was not wired because they had the premises all wired up, and certainly no one was trying to steal his recording devices, but he didn't have them.
All right, so he really had no money, mail matter, or property.
No, he had none.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Tice, Mr. Ravitz, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been both to your clients and the court. The case is taken under advisement.